Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. I'm Karen Tate, and tonight's musical offering opening the show was Breath of Passion by Zingaya, and they're out of Las Vegas. You know, if you listen to the show regularly, you know I play that a lot. There's just something about that music. It makes me feel like I'm sitting on my camel, and I'm just, you know, feeling the rocking of the gait of the camel as it glides across the sand dunes. I guess someday I'm going to have to ask Zingaya if living in Las Vegas with the desert out there inspired that music. Anyway, tonight I have a great double feature for you. At the top of the hour, we have returning to the show Marie Jones. She was on the show about, I don't know, maybe a month or so ago, a little bit more, talking about the Trinity Secrets, and we're having her back because her other book is equally intriguing. It's called Science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena and UFOs. Now, this is a departure from our usual topic a bit, but, you know, when you consider how close quantum physics and magic are getting, well, I think we have to listen to this. The topic certainly piques my curiosity, and I know it does my listeners out there as well. Then, in the second half of the show, Melanie Hudson will be chatting with me about being a sexy, spirited, and strong positive energy woman, which is the title of her book. But before we get to this important subject, I have a couple quick announcements, and I want to talk to you a bit about gratitude and share an experiment I did a couple days ago. So let's start first with gratitude. I felt like maybe we needed something positive and uplifting considering what you hear when you turn on the news today. Gratitude and appreciation. In the times we're living in today, it might seem hard to conjure up those feelings sometimes. Maybe we're full of fear, anger, jealousy, disappointment. Well, you know, we can't let those negative feelings get the upper hand, especially because showing gratitude and appreciation is such a powerful, magical tool of the cosmos. It's actually part of the equation of how the law of attraction works. What we focus on comes back to us because our thoughts are powerful tools of manifestation. So if we focus on lack of money or bills, well, guess what? That's what we'll get. If we focus on how miserable we feel, we'll continue to be in the dumps and in a bad mood. So be appreciative, even if you feel there might be days when maybe the only thing you have to be grateful for is the beautiful cat purring in your lap, because, you know, you'll get that love and serenity back. But really, think about everything you do to, you know, as how you can look at it as being grateful. And, you know, be grateful for everything around you. I think sometimes we forget about all we really do have to be grateful for. Immerse yourself in the positive, gold, glowing feeling of gratitude and appreciation, and you will attract to yourself more things to be grateful for. Be appreciative of the money you have, and more will come to you. Be appreciative of the love and good friends that you do have in your life, and more will come to you. And remember, the more you feel you have, the more you actually manifest. Then you'll have more to share with others, to be generous. Because, you know, that's part of the power of the attraction equation, too, as the circle of reciprocity turns. Be someone who defines themselves by their gratitude and their sharing. Be concerned for another, and others will be concerned for you. We're not islands. We're not all not interconnected. We depend on each other. We're not separate. Goddess teaches us our relatedness, not survival of the fittest individualism. Now, this doesn't mean you have to be satisfied with what you have and can't want more than you might already have, but focus on gratitude for what you do have, not scarcity, and you'll get back what you give out into the universe. Now, I'm going to talk a little more about that toward the end of the show and actually give you some tools to do that that maybe you hadn't thought about before, some fun things to help you remember to show gratitude every day. But just real quickly here before we get to Marie, a couple quick announcements. You can now get Voices of the Sacred Feminine on iTunes. You can download them right there, and there's a button for subscribing to the podcast as well. Also, save the date. That's July 4th. Sacred Sundays are starting at the Green Man in Hollywood. That's in Southern California, if you're in the area. And they're going to continue for each consecutive fourth Sunday, and I'm one of the facilitators. Check out my webpage at KarenTate.com. Go to the Sacred Sundays button and see what it's all about. We've been on hiatus for a bit, but now we're back and happy to be serving the community once again. Also, July 31st, another save the date, is the annual Isis Birthday Mediterranean Feast. We've been celebrating the birthday of our Great Mother for almost a decade each July, and we continue the tradition this year, but this time with a feast instead of a high tea. So if you're interested in joining us, it's going to be in Hawthorne. I'm happy to give you details. Just email me, and I'll send you the menu, the cost, and the exact location. Okay, so that brings tonight's announcements and comments to a close as we get to tonight's important guest, Marie Jones, and I thank her for her patience as I shared that stuff about gratitude and those announcements, because I think it's important. So let me tell you a little bit about Marie before we begin our chat, in case you don't remember her from the last time she was on or probably forgot. Marie D. Jones is the best-selling author of the popular and highly regarded book, PSI, Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. Marie is also the author of 2013, End of Days or New Beginning, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, and co-author with her father, geophysicist Dr. John Savino of Supervolcano, the catastrophic event that changed the course of human history. She also co-authored 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, The Meaning Behind Mysterious Signs, Sequences, and Synchronicities, and The Resonance Key, Exploring the Links Between Vibration, Consciousness, and the Zero Point Grid, with Larry Flaxman, her partner in Para Explorers. She has an extensive background in new science, metaphysics, and the paranormal. And she's worked as a field investigator for MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network in L.A. and San Diego in the 80s and 90s. She currently serves as director of special projects for the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team. I could tell you more about her. She's been on the History Channel and done all sorts of radio and TV. But you know what? Let's just start talking to Marie ourselves. Marie, welcome to the show.
It's good to be back.
Well, thank you for being back. And, you know, as I'm reading your long list of books, wow, how do you find the time?
I don't know.
Is your full-time job?
It's it has been for quite a while. And, you know, I complain. It's so funny. I'm glad I heard your gratitude opening, because I complain all the time because writers really never stop working. If we're not sitting at the computer, it's just stuff is going through our heads. But I love what I do, and I am so grateful for it. And that reminded me to be grateful and to you know, not complain. I mean, everybody complains, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
well, you
so
know,
that was good.
Same sort of scenario for me, you know. I forget to be grateful, too. And I started reading about gratitude, and it seems that when someone practices gratitude on a regular basis, it sort of helps them develop like an antidote to fear and depression.
Right.
You almost get like a certainty about life that everything is going to be okay.
Right.
And I thought, you know what, if we need that today.
Right. It shifts your focus. And once you do that, it's just like your energy level starts to rise. But, you know, we're human. We sink back into those old habits so easily.
Yeah. It's true. That's why we have to keep reminding ourselves. And that's what I'm going to actually talk about later, how we can kind of keep in that positive headspace. You know?
Right, because life is so much better when you're in that headspace. But I sometimes think it's just so conditioned and ingrained in us to go back to the default setting.
Well, and I think it also is easy to regress back there, because when you turn on the news, I mean, you either have some idiot sitcom that insults your intelligence, or you have gloom and doom. Sometimes it's hard to find good stuff in between.
Just don't watch it.
Yes, there you go. You're probably not a TV watcher. That's how you get so much done.
You know, I only watch the news for the weather. And the funny local stories, and I cannot stand the rest because it drains my energy, and I'm depressed. So what good am I going to be?
Well, you know, I found too, you know, I was letting myself get really wrapped up into a pickle over my angst and anger over, you know, what the Republicans are doing and how they don't care about people. And, you know, I was either on Facebook or somewhere, you know, trying to help raise awareness, but I had to stop. You know, I had to pull back because it was really, it was taken over, you know. And I started realizing that I just wasn't as happy. Yes, I felt like I was doing a good service, but at the same time, my own mental health was suffering, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I've had to pull back quite a bit. I just actually agreed to go to a local meetup for progressive causes. I thought, you know, I want to be involved. I want to do things, but I promise myself I'm only going to do proactive things and not get caught up in the negative, the conflict, and I want to be proactive.
You know, indulge me for just another minute here. It's so interesting that you said that, because, you know, I've been studying Kabbalah recently. Because it's really fits like a glove with, you know, the ideals of goddess spirituality. I'm really surprised, quite frankly. But anyway, that's one of the things they teach you, is not to be reactive, to be proactive. And I started realizing that, you know, every time I got angry at the Republicans and would, you know, post something on Facebook or something like that, I was returning their negativity with negativity.
Exactly.
So just
fighting
like
fire with fire, and then everybody's burned.
Yes. But this idea of gratitude, if everybody started to show gratitude, if everybody started to share, if that was the dynamic out there in the cosmos, we'd beat them that way.
Exactly. And, you know, that's actually really true in a sense that, you know, when you sink down to the level, I think it might have been Dr. Wayne Dyer who once said, you know, when you're against something, it saps your energy. So find something that you can be for. So instead of saying I'm against this and that and this and that and what they're doing and what they're saying, let me focus on what I'm for. I'm for justice. I'm for humanity. I'm for human rights. I'm for equal rights, blah, blah, blah. And that's much more empowering. And I'm really retraining myself, you know, to focus on, instead of fighting, what can I do? Let me turn away from the fight and the conflict.
And do something
with the things that I can do.
Absolutely. Well, we are on the same page, lady.
Yes, I know.
I wish I
could do more, but, you know, we can only do what we can.
That's right. But, you know, there are a lot of other people feeling just like we're feeling. There's a lot of other people in the fight. You know, I was looking at Rachel Maddow, I think it was, yesterday, and people are in the streets in Ohio and in Wisconsin. You know, this thing's going to turn around.
And,
so,
you know, we are both doing with our work. We're helping, and I have to remember that it may not seem like that, but if I can, you know, expand people's minds or raise their consciousness or get them to look at their lives in a different way, then I am doing more than I think I am, and I shouldn't beat myself up.
All right, well, let's get to the phenomena, the UFO stuff, and you know, all the paranormal things that I know listeners have tuned in for. First, you know, let's just start with the very basic. You know, I kept saying PSI science, but I don't think that was right. It's probably science. I mean, tell me what that spelling. What's the play on that?
Right, I know. And actually, it was really frustrating because the word psi, the P is silent, and psi is really just sort of an umbrella term for paranormal, psychic phenomenon, mind over matter. But when, you know, I knew I wanted to use the word for the title, but I kept thinking, I don't know, it's going to be really hard for radio show hosts to pronounce and people to say, but it looked so good that we, you know, the publisher and I, we thought, okay, let's just go with this. It's just such a great-looking word. But, science, PSI, I've heard every different variation you can imagine.
Okay. All right. So it's really talking about the psychic phenomena, the paranormal, this whole sort of, I don't know if you want to call it otherworldly, not mundane stuff.
I think that's a good term because, a lot of people will automatically, when they hear the paranormal, they think of ghosts. Or maybe
mm-hmm.
they'll think of psychic abilities. And it's really anything that is beyond the normal. So
okay.
we have to broaden the term paranormal quite a bit.
Yeah.
The unknown. I love that.
The unknown. There you go. Well, all right. So starting at the beginning, what inspired you to write the book about quantum physics and the paranormal? And you definitely break the mold. I hate to be stereotypical here, but you're a beautiful woman. Somehow I just
Thank
don't
you.
See you as somebody into quantum physics. I see some old gray-haired guy with a scraggly beard and glasses, That's
oh my
probably
gosh.
What your dad looks like.
my dad, who is a scientist, he's older now, but when he was younger, he looked exactly like Bruce Springsteen. So all of my teenage girlfriends used to come to the house just so they could see my dad because he looked exactly like him. And he's still a really good-looking guy. But I have loved science since the day I came out of the womb. I don't know. I was a tomboy. I had chemistry sets and geology sets, and I was into outer space and astronomy. I also had a real interest in the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
I told ghost stories all the time. I was writing since I was really young about aliens, and I thought Bigfoot lived in the woods behind my house. This stuff, it must have been something in a past life because I've asked my mom and dad, did something happen to me? And nothing. They can't, right. So I think it's just genetics. My mom's real creative and artistic and imaginative. My dad's the scientist. I think the genes just cross in me.
Well, let me just ask you right off the bat. All of these TV shows, and I admit occasionally I get sucked in and I watch one because I'm hoping maybe one of these will finally show me something. Do you believe in all of those gadgets that they use that will pick up paranormal or
right.
ghost activity or any of that? Or is this just hokum for, TV viewers?
Yeah, most of what you see on those TV shows is really a joke. In terms of the equipment, all that equipment is doing is measuring environmental data that may or may not have anything to do with ghosts. We have no clue. It could be measuring environmental data that has to do with the presence of the investigators.
Good point.
It could be locational based. It could be seismic in origin. The problem is that those pieces of equipment, most of which are incorrectly used by the people on TV, are only made to measure things, in our known laws of physics or laws of science. We may be talking about phenomena that operates under completely different laws of science, laws of physics, foundational forces that we have absolutely no clue as to what they are. So our little equipment, even when it's custom designed and expensive, is so limited. It's measuring what we can measure here in this level of reality. If we're talking about a parallel universe, another dimension, something that is being projected from another dimension, other types of energy in another system, The stuff that we have here isn't quite going to cut it. And I know it's
right.
really frustrating for a lot of ghost hunters, quote unquote, to try to figure out, how can we measure that stuff? We may not be able to right now, so we focus on the environmental data that we can get
mm-hmm.
and try to find commonalities, try to find things that are always present. And here's the thing, the work that I do with Larry Flaxman, what we're realizing is that there's one common denominator to every single paranormal event, and that is a human being, the presence of a human being. So we are trying to get these groups to feature their, to focus a little bit less on their equipment and start looking at the human factor, human physiology.
So what does that mean exactly? That it's, a human has to be present. That the whatever it is out there is attracted to the human body?
Well, we could be triggers. We could be the mechanism by which these things are manifesting. We could be manifesting them. In the quantum world, we have what's called the observer effect. And that is that any kind of observer, it doesn't have to be human, it's just anything that observes a quantum experiment, and that can be some type of measuring device as well, can influence the outcome of that experiment. So on the grander scale, as observers, are we influencing what we perceive as reality? Are we manifesting it, or are we sort of the middleman, the mechanism by which it is allowed to manifest? Could it involve brain chemicals? Could it involve genetic data that we aren't really familiar with? Why is it that some people see things and others don't? Does it have something to do with, you know, somebody having a little more DMT or maybe a little more estrogen or whatnot in their system? So all that stuff has to be looked at because, again, the human, the person, the investigator, the person being haunted, that's the common denominator.
Well, and does that play into, you know, you would hear, you know, you would see these movies where when a kid was going through puberty, it would attract poltergeists. Is that sort of the same thing?
It is, because poltergeist activity specifically is linked to hormonal, very extreme emotional brain activity in adolescents, usually girls. When they're going through the hormonal changes of adolescence, or they're getting their first period, or, you know, they're teenagers and the hormones are running wild, that is when this stuff is able to somehow manifest. So you hear so much less about it in, say, a grown person or a baby. I'm sure there have been cases here and there. So if that's true, we have to try to figure out what is it about teenage girls and even teenage boys, but mainly teenage girls, that is serving as the mechanism for this energy to manifest itself in the physical world. Is it their estrogen, some type of sex hormone? Is it a brain chemical, serotonin, dopamine, that is going through the roof, or maybe they don't have enough of, they don't have as much as someone else? What is going on physiologically? Is it the sheer power of emotion itself? Because we're starting to realize thought has energy.
Well, and, you know, and that, well, that could open up so many doors. Why not a crazed serial killer? You know, why not, I don't know, look at all the unrest in the Middle East and the people in the streets, you know, the Egypt Spring, is that whatever they call it, Middle Eastern Spring. I mean, all of that emotion, I would almost think that it would be conjuring up something.
I think it feeds on itself and it causes collective things like war.
Or, you know? I wonder, and natural phenomena, you know, if it can contribute to climate change. I mean, I know this is way out there, you know, but if it's all energy.
Right. We have to start looking at that, though. I mean, we may not be able to prove that now, but we could collectively be creating the outcome of the planet itself, politically, environmentally, sociologically, culturally. Certainly when you look at things like religion, and if you take that to the extreme, fundamentalism or cults, you do see how the power of collective belief can cause people to do the most outrageous things, including take their own lives in mass numbers.
Right.
So I absolutely agree with you that there is something there that needs to be looked at, but because it's not so easily provable, you know, it sort of gets pushed to the fringe of science.
Yeah, and how do you measure it? I mean, you can't measure it. You know, it's almost like you, I mean, imagine telling somebody, I mean, I can just see that some people wouldn't even understand that there's energy in that, you know? I mean, they don't even have the concept of energy, you know, as that humans create energy, you know?
Yeah, I think they will want to have it come from the scientific community before they'll believe it. And that's kind of sad, because I think that what happens is we wait for science to prove something, which may never happen, but it's happening anyway. We need, if there's a way for us to understand that we are all creating the havoc that we are complaining about and that we don't like. We could stop that. But instead people say, well, I don't really believe that. I'm going to wait till science proves it before I take any kind of positive action to change it. And that's
right.
really bad.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. I mean, why not try anything, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, it's like the idea of, you know, when people would get together at the same time across the planet, you know,
mm-hmm.
synchronize.
And meditate or pray, right.
Yes, yes.
Right.
You know, I wish there was a way to measure that because it's all the same thing we're talking about.
There is. And there's actually the Global Consciousness Project is going on through, it was at Princeton, and now I think it's been moved, but it's called the Global Consciousness Project. And what they do is they have people all over the world that have these, they're called black boxes or eggs. They're random event generators that at times of extreme duress, like say right before 9/11 or the Oklahoma City bombing or an assassination or the death of Princess Diana, they have been able to show on these random event generators that there is a visible change in the randomness of the zeros and ones that are supposed to show up. And it's kind of hard to explain, but say on any given day you might have 50 zeros, 50 ones, but during these particular events there might be 90 ones. And 10 zeros. And what they're showing is that human intention, human thought, human emotion can possibly be measured, and it does influence very sophisticated measuring devices that are placed all over the world. My partner Larry Flaxman has one. He was given one through the project. And it's just absolutely fascinating that right before 9/11, the uptick in the non-randomness of these numbers was just amazing.
Hmm.
Almost
so would
like
that
we are
also,
predicting. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you could predict that something was going to happen.
Right. Something
was going to happen.
There was
feeling. Would that
right.
have something to do? You know how you always hear on the full moon the emergency rooms are filled
right.
with more people?
Exactly.
Is it sort of the same thing?
I think we have a sixth sense that picks up on or intuits something awful is going to happen, a sense of foreboding, I love to say, you know, a disturbance in the force. And I think George Lucas, between the force itself, which is such a great concept for, you know, the infinite intelligence, and a disturbance in the force where you're not quite sure why you feel a certain way, but you do, and you probably
mm-hmm.
ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people have that, and they just totally override it with their rational mind, or they ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, I feel kind of weird. I don't know why. Oh, well, whatever. I have to go to work. You know, we
right.
just totally push it under the rug.
Right,
So apparently these random event generators, which are still operating, are measuring those intuitions, because if there are enough of them collectively to have a sort of tipping point, that energy has to show up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like solar flares reaching us from the sun. Eventually something happens here on Earth. Well, if all of our intentions and thoughts and intuitions are giving off even the tiniest bit of energy, but if enough people are doing it at the same time, it's got to cause a blip on the radar.
Well, would that mean, Marie, am I taking this in the wrong direction? And please tell me if I'm misunderstanding. If we could prove that, couldn't we then become proactive and with enough people focused on the very same thing, push things in a certain direction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the sad thing is, look at when that happens the most. It usually happens with end-of-the-world scenarios, right?
Mm-hmm.
Y2K,
mm-hmm.
everybody collectively, you know, panicked over Y2K, and of course nothing happened. Now
right.
they're on to 2012. We need to start doing that more often, looking forward to wonderful things, not end-of-the-world scenarios. I think we have a collective death wish built into us as human beings. I don't really know why. Maybe it's because when you buy into some end-of-the-world scenario, you can give up responsibility for all of the crap that's going on in your life. It's like, oh, you know, I don't have to worry about it. I can't do anything to change it. We're all going to die. I mean, it's like such a cop-out.
Well, either that or if you know, you don't believe that, you know, I don't know if I'm using the right term, but I think you'll understand what I mean. If you don't believe heaven is here and you think there's some great beyond where it's going to be better, then, you know, why put your energy into making here a good place?
Exactly.
You know, it's the other place you're aiming for, you know, or these end of days people who can't wait to see Jesus.
Exactly.
You know, why wouldn't they push the button? Why wouldn't they deplete the earth? You know, they're not looking to the same future.
And it's a wonderful way for them to pass the responsibility of having to take care of the planet and having to explain their actions and having to love and forgive, et cetera, et cetera. So the perfect victim mentality. But there have been some studies that showed that during some of these group meditations that, you know, crime, and I know in the Washington, D.C. area, crime took a real dip. I don't remember the year particularly, but they did one of these mass meditation experiments. The problem is they need to be done more. They need to be done in according to the scientific method, where they can be repeated and duplicated with enough controls applied so that we can take something like that is so elusive and be able to scientifically prove it. And I think we can. I just don't think there are enough great minds with the money behind them. The minds are there. There's just not enough money to fund these projects. IONS, the Institute of Noetic Studies with Dr. Edgar Mitchell started, the Apollo astronaut. Dean Radin is working with this stuff. A lot of wonderful physicists are trying to say, come on, you know, we need to look at the fact that consciousness may have a role in reality, in the physics of reality itself, and more money needs to go into that.
Right, right. Well, getting us back on track, I mean, that was all interesting and important, but let's get back to the paranormal. Did you actually have any personal experiences that, I don't know, maybe had you believe in there was a connection between the paranormal and the quantum worlds?
In terms of, well, I'd always believed that the paranormal was a reality of its own, I guess you could say. And I'd had some, very, I would say, minor experiences because I never came face-to-face with an alien or Bigfoot or anything like that. But in terms of the quantum physics, I had always been immersed in metaphysics. And that is where I started to see the connections. I started to hear people talking about things like, you know, intention, the power of thought to create your reality, the zero-point field, this, you know, fundamental state of reality. All these little things kept popping up. And as I was learning more about quantum physics, I was also doing my MUFON UFO research and still immersed in the paranormal, and I kept seeing the connections. So when I set out to write the book, I had really come to the conclusion that if we look at what goes on at the quantum level, which is really, really bizarre, might we be able to explain some of this stuff happening up here at the cosmic scale that we can't figure out? And when I started to look at some of those quantum concepts, they seem to make an awful lot of sense. That doesn't prove it, but they
elaborate a little bit.
Well, let's take something like ghosts. Everybody knows what a ghost is. Well, most people, a vast majority of people, will say that the ghost is a spirit of a dead person. And they'll come up with all kinds of theories as to how that energy is trapped here, and they're just trapped here and they need somebody to help them cross over, and it becomes very spiritual, very metaphysical. But what's happening now with the introduction of theoretical physics and quantum physics into the paranormal community, we're now able to say, well, wait a second, a ghost could also be. We're seeing the image of a person who is still alive in a parallel universe, in an alternate dimension. We might be seeing a holographic projection from a higher dimension onto our lower three-dimensional platform. We may be seeing a time traveler, an entity or person that is living in the future, yet somehow being projected here to our present or lived in the past. We cannot just say that a ghost is the spirit of a dead person.
Right.
Now we need to expand. Deja vu, one of the most understandable phenomena, because so many people have it. I think everybody knows what deja vu is. And for so long, the rote explanation was that it is a memory misfire, that somehow the brain is instantaneously processing something that's happening as, and forming it as a memory at the same time, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, there's been a lot of studies into deja vu, and we do know certain parts of the brain that are affected, and believe it or not, they are the same parts of the brain that cause auras right before a grand mal seizure in epileptics, which is really interesting because epilepsy is also associated with poltergeist phenomenon. Same part of the brain, the frontal lobe, is very active. So with deja vu, now we have to think that possibly during those 10 or 15 seconds, we might be having an experience of ourselves in a parallel universe where we are talking to the same person, wearing the same clothing, doing the same thing that we are doing in this universe.
Wow.
And other people that have deja vu have a past life recall. Some of them have a precognitive event and see the future. We cannot limit ourselves to that simple memory misfire explanation anymore. So
what you're talking about, would it somehow also apply to people who have these after-death experiences where they think they're on the other side?
Absolutely. What ultimately, in the quantum world, reality is not created until somebody observes it into creation. And that's a really simplified way of talking about what's called the wave-particle duality. Everything at the quantum level is a particle and a wave at the same time. It's just all in a state of superposition. It's sort of everything and nothing until somebody or something comes along and observes a particle into a fixed position. It's called collapsing the wave function.
Okay, so wait, stop right there. Does that mean if something isn't observed, then it doesn't actually happen?
There.
It might not exist? That makes me think of, what is that saying? If a tree falls in
exactly.
the forest?
And nobody's there to hear it, does it make a sound? And that is what quantum theory and quantum physics is saying, that there are actually these principles, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, and this, that, and the other, that the observer is so paramount and important and critical to what ends up being made physical, in a sense, in the quantum reality. A particle will never be a particle until somebody or something observes it and stops its wave function and gives it a fixed physical position. So that's kind of really neat to think about, the fact that maybe ghosts are always all around us, but we have to consciously somehow take an act of observation in order to perceive them. And that may involve a lot of different things, you know, like we said, physiological, environmental things, because not everybody can do that 24 hours a day. But we could be immersed in other levels of reality, and we're all looking for that mechanism that allows us to collapse that superposition and see fixed physical things in those other levels of reality. And maybe we have an after-death experience like that, that's exactly what we're doing.
Well, where does that leave people who, the real deal, you know, the people who really, here I'm saying the real deal, but okay, if there really are people who can communicate with, I don't know, people on the other side. I mean, I don't know, for some reason I believe that there maybe some people can. How does that factor into this?
Again, I think I like to compare it to singing. Everybody can sing. Not everybody can sing well. So in other words, these are dormant abilities that we all have, but for some reason, some people are able to activate them better than others. And again, what Larry and I are looking at are, well, what are the environmental factors and what are the physiological factors that may be present in the people that can activate them as opposed to the ones where they kind of remain dormant? I think it's something, it could be in our DNA that we all are able to do. I mean, we're all able to. We all have the same brains. They're the same structure. We all are made basically of the same stuff. So there should be no reason why we can't all do those same things, except for...
But the point is, these ghosts may not always be dead people. Could be other... I mean,
right.
You're not saying that it's not... they're talking to people on, they're not talking to people on the other side. You're just saying we have to open up our awareness because it could be so many other things other than just a ghost.
Right.
A dead
In other words, there are probably could be 10 different kinds of ghosts. One could be the spirit of a dead relative. One could be you're looking at somebody who exists in another dimension and they're aware of you. One is somebody who exists in another reality and they're not aware of you. Some people report loops, their imprints, that the ghost appears to just be doing the same movements over and over with absolutely no awareness of being watched. And the same thing with UFOs. There could be 10 different kinds of UFO activity going on. One being the nuts and bolts craft coming from some distant part of the universe, coming to pay a visit, where we can actually see the craft. It's physical. You can knock on it. You can kick it. There are the interdimensional theories. There are the parallel universe theories. Now there are even the theories that ghosts or that UFOs are manifestations of human consciousness, that they are some kind of archetypal symbolic, that they have something to do with the cultural and sociological times that we're going through, because entities tend to change with the times.
So in other words, they could exist because we believe them into manifestation?
Absolutely, or somehow we are able to allow them to be manifested. We may serve, again, as some kind of trigger, some kind of mechanism by which the unseen can find a way to be seen. Maybe they're using a dormant part of our brain. Maybe they're, activating DNA that we're not quite sure what it does yet. But we have to keep ourselves in the equation because, again, we're always the common denominator.
So the observer is the key element rather
Absolutely.
Than just somebody who's passive on the periphery.
Right. But an observer can even be a camera, and this is something that has been discussed as is a house haunted if there's nobody there to see the haunting? So people have thought, well, look, we could put our digital recorders in there and run a video camera. And if we get anything, then that means yes. But that not necessarily, because any time you have an observer, it doesn't necessarily have to be human. What an observer does is it measures. So even if you put a camera in there and you leave and there's no humans present, you still have the observer effect to contend with in that you have an object that is going to be measuring something. And again, if there's in a state of superposition, the minute you attempt to measure is when you collapse that superposition and you create particles, you create physical objects.
You disturb the flow.
You absolutely, absolutely. If you let the flow go, it's just flow. When you disturb it and that requires something, it could be a person or a stick, something that is observing or measuring or just stopping the flow. So that's been a real argument is, how much of an effect does the observer have? And again, at the quantum level, 100%. Is the same thing happening here? Are we observing things into our reality based upon belief, conditioning, again, our own physiology, what we're capable of believing, fear? I think there's just so many factors now that we have to look at instead of just, he saw a ghost and it was the spirit of a dead person.
Right, right. Yeah, that's just too simple
it's
now.
Too simple.
I mean,
it doesn't explain why the guy standing next to him didn't see it.
Right, right. Well, now, are paranormal events contagious?
I think so, and Larry with his organization has kind of proven that. Again, it's not something scientifically provable, but a lot of organizations are attempting to do psychological experiments where they will take a group of people into a location without telling them anything about the history, and they'll plant seed stories. So they might say, Larry did an experiment at a very large facility once with a tour group where he planted a story that on the fifth floor, a little girl, 7-8 years old, has been heard in the past to call out, Mommy, Mommy, help me. And we had forms for people to fill out at the end of the tour, the investigation. And I'll tell you, 95% of the people reported exactly that on the fifth floor, hearing the voice of a young girl. Now, does that mean there was no young girl there? I don't know. Maybe they manifested it with collective belief. Somehow, a lot of people ended up having an experience, even though it was planted. It wasn't something that anybody had reported before. So again, the human mind, the power of the mind has to be considered. That's another huge factor.
So in other words, they expected to hear it.
Absolutely.
They were sort of told what maybe might happen,
right.
So their mind made it happen.
And that happens a lot with EVP, the electric voice phenomenon, where people take digital recorders and they'll ask questions. What we have found is that if you lead people, if you say after you do the EVP questions, okay, now we're going to play the recorder back, and right here you're going to hear a male voice scream, I have a dollar, you know, the vast majority of people will hear that, even though there's nothing there. Nothing was taped. And that shows, again, the power of the human mind to manifest what it wants to, what it believes, what it expects, and in a lot of cases, what it wants to because it wants to be a part of the group. So if you've got 10 other people saying they heard it, you're going to be more inclined to hear it. And there have been a lot of EVP studies that have shown that that isn't a factor. It doesn't explain the EVP where there is no leading, and there are some really scary things. You know, so again, we're probably dealing with a lot more than we think we are, but we can't just limit it to, you know, what we've seen on TV or just these very narrow-minded explanations that don't take into account us, you know, our own mind's consciousness, the quantum observer effect, the idea that there may be other levels of reality interacting with ours. We may not just be talking about our reality and the laws of physics that operate here.
Well, you know what you're making me think about now?
Mm-hmm.
You're making me think about, you know, sort of take this in another place, and maybe that's what where you were going to go when you were talking about, you know, what ancient religions have to say about this stuff. But it makes me think about, you know, like when the church talks about demons or the devil you know, things like that. I guess I'm wondering if, you know, are we just creating that, or does something of that energy, because I don't know what else to call it, does something of that energy exist somewhere that maybe breaks through to us sometimes?
Exactly, and it could be both. My feeling is that if we don't figure out first what known reality is, there is absolutely no way we can ever figure out the unknown. We still don't know what reality is. We don't know if it's a projection of our consciousness and our beliefs. We don't know if beyond what we see, if there's anything really out there other than what we project onto the, you know, the landscape of reality, or is it all there and we come and go and people live and die, but the reality stays the same. We're still arguing over that.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really hard to figure out what these bizarre, supernatural, paranormal, unknown anomalies are. But what that allows us to do, though, is expand the possibilities. And instead of just focusing on what our five senses can understand, we got to realize there's much more going on that meets the eye. Let's look beyond the boundaries, because maybe our reality is only one of a million or an infinite number.
They call it in the Kabbalah the 99%. We're living in the 1%, and the 99% is really the unknowable.
Right,
you know?
Right. And who knows when we're going to know it, if we ever will. I hope.
Well, now, when you sent me some of your press materials, there was something in here about the concept of resonance. What is that, first of all? And how does it apply to, like, ESP and remote viewing and all the stuff we've been talking about?
The thing about when I was writing science, I was trying to look for different ways that human consciousness might link into all of this, the paranormal and quantum physics. Resonance and the idea of vibrational frequency, sound even, if you want to call it that, it possibly could be the mechanism that allows us to sync up with other realities or other universes or other dimensions and get a glimpse of what's there, or perhaps they can somehow come through and manifest here. And basically resonance is just syncing or matching frequencies. And think about human language, where we say, well, I really resonate with that concept. Or
so it's like vibrations,
almost,
vibration. Maybe?
It's all about vibrational frequency, sound.
Okay.
And we've always ignored sound because we are a very visual species. But when we start to really look at sound and frequency and amplitude and vibration, down at the string theory, for example, is the theory that at the most fundamental basic level, we are made up of little teeny tiny vibrating strings. And the differences in the vibrations are what manifest physical creation. So if you have strings that resonate together, you can create one physical thing. If you have other strings that resonate together or sync up together, you create another physical thing. And when they don't resonate, it creates chaos or discord, kind of like in music. You know, you have harmonies. And when the strings don't resonate together, you have discord. It sounds terrible. So what we looked at, we wrote a book called The Resonance Key, where we really delved into the idea that vibration and different levels of resonance and vibration might allow our consciousness to align or sync up with these other realities that are always there. But if we're vibrating at a certain level for our day-to-day survival, we're going to be pretty much unaware of them.
Right.
And so there are ways that you can change your vibration. I mean, physiologically, we do it when we sleep. We do it at death, obviously. But also things like meditating and getting into altered states of consciousness where we may be raising or lowering our vibration.
Makes me think about that book, The Celestine Prophecy.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is we heard a lot about resonance through Egyptologists that were studying the pyramids, because they had found that inside the king's chamber, it was designed to, when you make certain sounds, the resonant vibration puts you into an altered state of consciousness. So the idea was that the king's chamber may have been a place where you went to kind of zone out, you know, or have an altered consciousness experience.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a fascinating concept. It is one that Larry and I are continuing to work with, because it really, especially in terms of things like string theory or the zero-point field, where you have quantum virtual particles popping in and out of existence, and they're vibrating. Everything vibrates. There is nothing at the foundational level of existence that does not have a vibration. And if that's the case, we need to look at these different resonant qualities of matter and energy and form and figure out how some of them sync up to create new energies, new forms, new realities, and what we have to do with that.
Well, this is really exciting stuff, you know, because I keep, you know, what I'm, the more you talk, I just keep thinking over and over and over again, we really can recreate this planet in a better way, if,
right.
You know, with raised awareness of this stuff.
I absolutely agree. I think it's happening. I think people are coming out of the closet, so to speak, and realizing that science and spirituality, or science and metaphysics, are really talking about the same thing, but in different languages. And even religions, no matter how traditional, if you look at some of the ideas and concepts in religion, you find parallels in quantum physics, in science, in theoretical physics. The Kingdom of Heaven is my absolute favorite. When I was writing about the zero-point field, which is the ground state of the universe, the ground energetic state, we all are immersed in this field. Everything comes from it. Everything goes to it. It's invisible. It is all through you. It is all around you. And then you go back and you read about Jesus talking about the Kingdom of Heaven. You know, I'll be darned if he wasn't talking about the zero-point field, or this, you know, it's been called other things, the Akasha, the Book of Life, quintessence, ether. There's a lot of different names for it. Larry and I refer to it as the grid of reality, all the interlocking levels that we are immersed in, yet we don't see them because they're invisible to us.
Hmm. Wow. So this, well, going back to the, and God, it's like there's so much here and we're starting to run out of time.
I know.
So this resonance, these vibrations, do they affect things like ESP and remote viewing? And because we can, if we alter our vibration,
right,
does that allow us to tap into ESP or to do remote viewing? Is that where you were kind of going with that? Or?
Well, right. If we have, if there is this field of information which would allow for precognition, you know, looking into the past or the future, remote viewing, because everything in this field of information is there. There's no linear time. Everything exists all at once. So the idea that you could tap into or access information in this field that you don't normally have might be occurring when somehow your consciousness is vibrating at the exact level of the field itself. So in other words, there's a syncing between you or your consciousness and the information field. And it opens up a door to be able to access and tap into that information and say...
So like you plug in almost.
You plug in. Oh, perfect way to put it. Yeah, you plug in. You know, and it's something that we're doing naturally. I mean, I think people throughout their day know that they are resonating either positively or negatively towards other people, towards their job, the health in terms of health. We are vibrating. We are not solid. Nothing is solid. Every single thing is vibrating. We are made
up. That's so hard to, it's hard to comprehend, though, is it? You know, the chair that I'm sitting in is really vibrating. I mean, I know that on a logical level, but.
Right. But the thing is that all of the particles making up that chair decided to resonate to the right frequencies to create
the chair. you know, and it's so funny. Here you're talking about all of this stuff. You know, have you ever been in a place in your life where it's sort of like all of the pieces were coming together and pointing to a similar thing? You know, it's so bizarre because I started, you know, I briefly mentioned Kabbalah in the beginning, but this is where I think Kabbalah is also going. You know, I'm really new at all of it, and I don't totally even understand what you're talking about. I'm getting it on the most basic, you know, kindergarten level. But segues me into the next question for you, because, you know, Kabbalah, they claim that they are like or one of the oldest belief systems. You know, they're before the Bible. You know, they're not connected to Jewish mysticism, anything like that, like some people think. You know, what do the ancient religions say about this stuff? I mean, besides what I'm suspecting that maybe Kabbalah is in sync with this, or were there others?
I think they all were. Hermetica, all of the pagan religion or traditions that end up being absorbed into traditional religion. I think the most, I hate to use the word primitive, it's not a really good word, but the oldest traditions and belief systems, what happened was you had people that were operating off of the world, nature. They were out in nature. They didn't have distractions that we have. They didn't have technology to think for them. They were very intuitive. They were very instinctual. They knew their bodies. They knew the world around them. They were probably much more able to do, to have psychic abilities and remote view for survival reasons. I mean, my gosh, they had to look for food and water and shelter. And I think that we, over time, as we became an agricultural species, and then the Iron Age and technology came in, we lost a lot of those abilities, a lot of that understanding, a lot of that mystical knowledge, because it, you know, technologically and scientifically, it seemed very primitive.
Yeah.
And here you have all the big religious traditions that decide they want to conquer and control people, and you can't do that if people already know how powerful they are and that reality is coming, you know, that they're creating it and observing it into effect. And you got to take all that stuff away and make them realize that without a middleman, they can't survive. So I think between just the progress of the species and the introduction of traditional religion, the control, the authority, it got beaten out of us. And now we're realizing, wait a second, it's still in there, and now is the time to bring it back because the other way isn't working.
So we're coming back, you know, it's almost like we're coming back full circle.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another thing you're making me think about, you might like to know about this too, unless you've already delved into this from another direction. I've had a woman on the show by the name of Marguerite Rigoglioso, and she talks about divine birth cults. Now, this might sound really way out there, and I'm going to do my best in my way to explain her theory, but this goes to what you were just saying, how perhaps we used to have these abilities that we no longer have.
Right.
she makes made the case in her thesis, and she's then put it in her books, that potentially, very long ago, women had the ability, not all women, but specially trained women, you know, who with special abilities that had been preparing for a long time, whatever that looked like, I don't know, but they actually could parthenogenically create life. So they didn't actually need a male. They were able to sort of tap into the energy of nature, and she calls it, I think she called it the light, okay? But I don't know if she literally meant the light or she just meant some, you know, some energetic source.
Right,
you know,
a source.
And gradually that ability was lost.
Right.
So I don't know if you want to know more about her. But,
I would love to. That sounds fascinating, and it actually makes sense in terms of how, I've read many times about how when language developed, the feminine, the goddess culture, was pretty much obliterated.
Yeah,
language, and all of these ways that the feminine aspect has just been suppressed and destroyed. And wow, if we could create life without men, you know, of course they're going to not want us to understand that. That's fascinating. I would love
to know.
Well,
and again, remember, she claims that, you know, every woman couldn't do it. It was, you know, select women who were trained for it, and she
right.
believes that of these unions, very special children were the result.
Oh, that's fascinating.
You know, and that's another part of it. You know, that maybe some of the heroes of mythology were these children. I think she
right.
said Hercules, Alexander the Great. I can't remember who else, but I'll email you her information.
I would love that. Yeah, I would love that, because I've always, you know, understood that mythology is really truth wrapped in fiction, and it would be fascinating to read more about that.
Well, Marie, this has really been awesome, and and I hope when your next new book comes out, you will let me know because you give me a chance to talk about things a little bit off topic. And,
I know, but right, we go off on tangents.
Well, you know, this is, you know, all of my listeners, we think about other things besides goddess spirituality too,
right.
You know, and politics, you know. We like this sort of thing as well. So
well,
it's a nice change of pace.
It is. I love it. I always love talking to you. It's wonderful.
Well, and you've broadened my horizons, too, and you've connected some dots for me tonight that weren't connected before.
But the problem is they lead to more dots.
Yes. You know, we will be lucky in our lifetime to understand it all, won't we?
We will. Or I just want to understand a small part of it, and I'll feel good. Then go on to the next life and maybe learn a little more.
Well, Marie, so for my listeners who are intrigued about your work as I am, can you tell listeners how they would, find out about your work? Do you have a website?
They can go to my personal website, which is mariedjones.com. And my website with the work I do with Larry Flaxman is paraexplorers.com, P-A-R-A for paranormal, paraexplorers.com. And everything is there, upcoming books, speaking engagements, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, Marie, again, thank you so much. It's been delightful. It's been intriguing. And, I really like what you're doing. It's interesting stuff.
Thank you. I'm sure I'll be back soon.
Okay. Well, good night, and good luck with the next new book.
Thank you. Take care, Karen.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, and lots of other stuff, as you can tell by tonight's topic. And if you've been listening to Marie Jones giving us her well-informed insights about how quantum physics might explain paranormal activity, you know what I'm talking about. Well, now, before we get to the second half of the show, because I see my friend Melody Hudson is there on the switchboard. She is the author of Sexy, Spirited, and Strong, Becoming a Positive Energy Woman. I want to finish what I was telling you a few minutes ago at the top of the hour, before we started the chat with Marie, about sharing and gratitude. So where we left off was we were talking about how it's so important to show gratitude and to share and not have a scarcity mentality. And I promised I'd come back and give you a tip on how to perpetuate that in your life a little bit more, so we don't fall into the rut of forgetting to be grateful. So what I want to share with you is something written by a woman by the name of Cheryl Glover. She's from New Thought Kabbalah. She says when she's at work, instead of taking a coffee break, she takes a creation break. A creation break. Well, she's working with the sacred to create her own reality. In order to create and manifest abundance, prosperity, health, relationships, income, and opportunity, we need to appreciate the abundance, prosperity, health, relationships, income that we already have. Forget about it might not be enough yet. Be grateful for the amount you do have. She says in her creation break, every day she takes a few minutes and consciously acknowledges. And she says stuff, you know, to herself, you know, to her sacred self out loud, to the universe. She says, I love and appreciate my family, my children, my parents, my siblings. I love and appreciate my friends. I love and appreciate my store and my clients. I appreciate the income I receive today. I'm grateful that I can help so many people. I'm grateful that I'm free. I mean, we don't even stop and think about that. You know, we just sort of take that for granted. She says, I'm grateful I can be spiritually free to worship as I see fit. She says, I'm grateful for the new opportunities that come my way. She says, I'm grateful I'm healthy and getting healthier every day. I'm grateful that Goddess is in my life. I'm grateful for my spiritual gifts and talents. Now, remember from what I told you before at the beginning, what you are grateful for, what you acknowledge, what you give thanks for, well, when you do that, it sort of makes an opening for you to get more of the same thing. So I'm sure you can sort of tailor that to fit your life. So consider incorporating a creation break into your daily routine. I think I'm going to do that. I think I really am. I think every time I look at that red string on my wrist, at least once a day, I'm going to try to remember to do that. So anyway, so that's what I wanted to tell you about gratitude. And I want to thank Melanie for her patience during that telling of gratitude. And I'm going to invite her to join me on the show right now. So let me unmute her. Hey, Melanie, are you there?
I'm here, Karen. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Thank you for your patience. I know we're getting started just a little bit later than I expected. I appreciate you waiting for me.
Not a problem. In fact, I just really enjoyed hearing about the gratitude acknowledgement. That was a really good reminder. I was feeling it as you were expressing it. I was feeling the gratitude. So thank you. I think that's a beautiful message for everyone, and it really touched me. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, well, no problem. You know, I started realizing that I felt so much more positive when I, you know, just did that, you know, that little bit of difference. And, you know, as I said earlier in the show when I was talking to Marie, because we talked briefly about it too, what happens is, you know, when you do that on a regular basis, well, it makes you have, a healthier outlook, a more positive outlook. And, I mean, and that sort of ties into what we're going to be talking about tonight, the positive energy woman.
It sure does.
Well, you know what? Before we start and go in that direction, let me just read your bio so my listeners know a little bit more about you. Okay, so this is Melanie. She's the author of Sexy, Spirited, and Strong, Becoming a Positive Energy Woman, and the writer of articles on subjects of women's spirituality, women's empowerment, and tantric yoga. She's a workshop facilitator and presents women's empowerment events for women and tantric yoga gatherings for both women and men. She's also, she wears other hats. She is a producer of commercials, documentaries, and television shows, and she's worked on programming with the Discovery Channel and the Learning Channel. Pretty impressive. She was the associate producer of the documentary Signs Out of Time, the story of archaeologist Maria Gimbutas, produced by filmmaker Donna Reed and writer-activist Starhawk. She was also a segment producer for the film about Catholic priests called Pink Smoke Over the Vatican with filmmaker Jules Hart. As an independent student of ancient women's history, Melanie focuses on the evolution of cultural practices, especially in the formation of the traditions of today's women and men. She weaves this valuable information into her work and lectures on various topics of women's ancient past. And right now she's working on her second book about ancient goddess cults and their practices, which women can practice today. So we're bringing it full circle, huh?
Yes, I really think that a lot of us have already kind of started to use some of those ancient practices of the past, and there's still some to bring forth, and just I would love for everybody in our whole society to start at least acknowledging them. I think our society would be in a better place if indeed we did.
Well, you know, it's funny because I didn't, you know, consciously feel like there was much of a connection between the top of the show and the second half of the show. But, you know, just the way things work out, you know, toward the end of my interview with Marie, you know, we started talking about, you know, these, you know, that we don't even know what our abilities are. You know, we've sort of lost the knowledge of what powers we may have, you know, had in ancient times, you know, when we didn't have all the distractions of our modern world. And I can very well imagine that with what you're doing, there's going to be some overlap there.
Well, you know, there really is. So much about, well, first of all, the topic about forgetting, or some of it is forgetting because of the way we have come to revere this technology that's been just evolving and evolving since, I guess, the industrial age, 1900s. But even before that, you know, centuries before that, when, as we all well know, there were certain practices that women had that we didn't forget, but we had to drive underground because it became unacceptable to do anymore. So it's some of those practices that I think we're starting to bring back, and we know the power that comes from practicing some of these things. Some of them as simple as just you know, dancing or calling in the directions and communing with Mother Earth. Those
yeah.
are the kinds of things that are coming back to our that we're remembering again and that we're using to empower ourselves with.
Yeah, I'm learning to run that energy through our bodies, tapping back into our sacred blood, you know, all
mm-hmm.
of that, you know, that stuff that we think maybe women used to do that, you know, really patriarchal religion drove out of us or else we'd have died, you know, quite literally. Well, you know, in your book, when I got your book in the mail, it was funny. I sort of, you know, I didn't go to the index or the bibliography. I just sort of opened it, and the first page that I opened it to was pleasuring. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's sort of what we're talking about a little bit, you know, because there's something right there. I can imagine in ancient temples that, you know, women were taught to, you know, to pleasure themselves without any shame, without any of the taboos that religion has, you know, put on women today. I thought it was brave of you to really include that in the book.
Thank you. You know, it is a little courageous, and But it's, to me, it's just important. It's very important for women to acknowledge the fact that, first of all, their sexual energy is, as well as their spiritual energy and their power and inner strength, are all equally important. But there's something about the sexual energy that's especially valuable, because it's not just a physical drive to find the mate and to please the mate. It's actually a very, or nor is it just about pleasure, because it is about pleasure as well, but it's more about taking that that energy that really we can use throughout our entire body. It's kind of it's got a healing aspect to it, and it's also life force energy, so it causes us to be more alive as human beings, as women, and with our female sexual energy. When we take that energy and we charge it up, and doing it with pleasure and acknowledging the glory and the miracle of our feminine bodies, and then taking that energy and really experiencing it throughout the body, that will take us to a higher level of being a woman, of being an evolved woman, because first of all, we're being conscious. We're just being conscious of our body and conscious of our energy. And then secondly, it's helping us to become a more energetic being. And when we become a radiant woman that is filled with energy that comes from that source, and of course there are other sources of energy, and we can go into that as well later. But when we have this effervescent energy about us, not only does it make us feel really good, but it makes other people feel really good. And when we talk about quantum physics and how everything is connected, when we become, when we heighten our frequency as human beings, when we become more radiant and more alive and more energetic and more creative and all of the things that come with that, it's going out into the quantum field, and so it's uplifting everybody. We're contributing to the upliftment of not only other women, but of the whole planet.
Wow, and so you just tied into my first guest. Well, you know, Melanie, I have to tell you, listening to you talk, I got a flashback of a woman dancer at a Long Beach Woman Spirit Fair, and you know what I'm talking about because you've been here. And I remember thinking, as I watched this woman dance, she was sort of doing, you know, music was sort of a sensual, slow belly dance, and she was doing this tantric sort of movement, and I can't remember whether she had a snake or not. I don't think that's really relevant, but what she was putting out, I felt, you know, 100 feet away from her. I could feel in that moment, it was sexual, it was powerful, it was delicious, it was beautiful. I mean, so many words I can't even describe, but then where my mind went, you know what, if women, you know, all or a lot of women had that power, could connect to that ability again, imagine how powerful they would have been. Imagine how the patriarchy would have wanted to squash that out. It's almost in that second I understood why patriarchy repressed women, because we were just too powerful. You know, we were not easily controlled, I wouldn't think. You know, we were autonomous, and we knew our abilities. We were the goddess's daughters, for heaven's sake, you know. And so no wonder they went on a campaign for thousands of years to make us forget that.
Yes. Well, you know, you've said so many wonderful things in that statement. One that I'd like to touch on is the fact that there must have been some type of a fear or a threat that or a misunderstanding that the men felt towards women in their power. And I think that that's something that has been really a source of disharmony on this planet over all of these centuries. The fact is that there's not a desire or maybe for some men there is, but for I think the overall male gender, there hasn't been a real desire to get to really learn about women and acknowledge their differences. And some, frankly, a lot of women are not so sure that they know that much about men either. I think that what needs to happen on this planet is that we really learn about each other's strengths for the, you know, in its best form, not just, you know, in men we admire the fact that we're strong. We need to love that they're strong and not just, you know, think about the aggression that comes with that from a lot of men. There are so many different flavors of all of this, all of our different essences. But if men had really just been able to acknowledge the power that comes with a woman when she is in her body, instead of feeling threatened by it, the whole planet could change. It could change right now.
Right, so, right. Well, and think too. That would be such a boon for men, really. If you know, if they weren't conditioned to have to be in control, if they were conditioned to be in partnership, what a powerful partner that would be. And dare I say, you know, the woman could probably put a smile on his face too every now and again.
Absolutely. And, you know, and then also that is part of the work that women need to do, though, right now, is that we need to get back into our power, because we have really, it's right back to the beginning of our conversation, we have forgotten. We've forgotten how to get in touch with our bodies. We have forgotten how to love our femininity. And doing something like the belly dance or even hip movements, which is something I greatly recommend as well, can help a woman get into her power. It's subtle, but you can notice it just by doing it yourself for just a few minutes, because there's a lot of energy in our pelvic girdle, and moving it in a certain way, it really stimulates physiologically. A lot goes on when you move the hip muscles and if you bring in consciousness and start contracting and releasing the muscles of the yoni, the vagina, that will really, really get some energy going. And then
I want to get more into that and more into the book, but, you know, something you said made this question pop into my head. Do you think that there are some women who are really resistant to be in their own power, maybe because of religion or the other mm-hmm. things? You know, like some of the women out there that are more for the patriarchy than they really are for women's empowerment?
Exactly. Yes, I do believe that's true. And really, what's happened is we've just been so conditioned over so many generations. We've learned so many things, and not only have we learned it mentally, but also through our upbringing. But I believe that there's a lot of stuff that's inside of us in our DNA. There are, you know, probably women out there who are still feeling very fearful about being in their body and in their power, because there's an echo of what happened to them back in the, you know, dark ages when they were burnt at the stake. Or their grandmothers were burnt at the stake. So, and they were burnt at the stake for being women and for being sexy and being smart and being all the wonderful feminine things that they were, destroyed for. So
you think there's such a thing as DNA memory?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I really do.
Well, so Melanie, let's start at the top. I mean, was there something in particular that inspired you to write the book?
Thank you. Yeah, that's a really good question. What happened was, this book is really about raising your health self-esteem to a higher place. So even though the title is Sexy, Spirited, and Strong, Becoming a Positive Energy Woman, the bottom line is positive energy women have high self-esteem. So, of course, the story starts with me when I was younger. I didn't have high self-esteem. I was doing okay in life, but there when I was in my 30s, something started to turn with myself. I don't know if it was programming from the media or from what I was learning about myself or comparing myself to other women, but I really felt like I didn't have any gifts. I didn't like myself at all. In fact, I loathed myself. And I decided to, and I did a lot of exploration to try to get through that. And the one thing that I discovered that really started my journey to healing and self-love was the study of tantric yoga. And tantric yoga is an energy yoga. And it really is one in which we acknowledge our sexual energy. And it was the first time I'd ever stumbled upon a path of any nature in which women were revered. It was always the man. Well, in Tantra, the woman is revered. In ancient tantric cults, the woman was actually the vehicle towards enlightenment. So that started me off on my path to healing. And from that, I started reading more about ancient women's history. Of course, I read When God Was a Woman and Chalice and the Blade, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I continued my journey of exploration of energy. And lo and behold, and I also did other things as well. I did study some self-esteem types of exercises with other healers, and also personal transformation work that I did with some other people like Christopher Howard. So all of these things really helped me to become full of self-love and appreciation, which a place where I never thought I could be when I was younger. It's to a point where I don't even when the times don't seem like things are going well at all, I still love myself. I love who I am inherently, and I have acknowledged who I am. I've identified my gifts, and I know that I'm much more than what I appear to be on this planet in a human form. So it's helped me so much that I just feel like it's time for other women to really get this, because everywhere we go, I see beautiful women, smart women, successful women, and they're still filled with self-doubt. A lot of women don't like themselves. They call themselves names. They hit themselves. They have body issues. The list goes on and on and on. And I think it's because we're so disconnected from our spiritual selves, our knowing who we are inside, from our sexual energy, and from our inner strength energy, our power energy.
Well, now you talk in the book about I want listeners to know this is a how-to book. You can go buy her book, yeah, and she tells you how to do this stuff. You have personal practices that you say help a woman feel sexy, feel that inner strength, feel that spiritual energy. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. That is correct. And the book offers a lot of different exercises. And so you can either you can create your own little workout, or just one by one individually practice some, because each little practice not only creates an awareness of what is happening in our body, it makes us become a little more aware that of our physical being and our energetic being and then our spiritual being. But also it will have an effect. Each little exercise does have a lasting effect that will help, will raise that energy in your body. It'll balance it out. It'll help bring up feelings of well-being. And really, little by little, you do feel more and more self-love and self-appreciation. And it is like a discovery of yourself. And that will always send you into a place of heightened awareness of who you are, heightened love, all of the really wonderful things that we want to be and feel.
So we can get blissed out on ourselves.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I interrupted you before when you were talking about an exercise, you know, doing something with the your yoni muscles and the pelvic girdle. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Would you mind going back to that? Because is that one of the exercises that taps into either the inner strength or the sexual energy? I mean, tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, this particular exercise does stimulate sexual energy more than anything, although it also does touch in on the spirit energy. And when I say spirited, it's not just spiritual outside, meaning, you know, the connection
sacred.
to goddess. It's our own inner spirit, our soul. So, and then also it does help empower us. It does help us feel a little more powerful because, first of all, it is making us more powerful, just getting that juice and that energy going, but also because it does stimulate a little bit of the belly muscles. So one of my favorite exercises to get you going is to, while you're standing up, just listening to some music or not even listening to music, and bringing your and engaging your hips so that they thrust forward and then tilt back. So they go back, forward and back, forward and back, and doing it rhythmically. And then once you start getting into the hang of the forward and back rhythm, focus on the vaginal muscles around the opening of the vagina. And when you thrust the hips forward, you squeeze the yoni. And then when the hips tilt backward, you release. And then you thrust forward and squeeze and tilt back and release. And that gets some juice and action going inside of your yoni. You're really pumping up the muscles. You get blood flow going, and you get the juice, the sexual energy juiced up.
Well, it makes me think about these women spending all of that money to rejuvenate their vaginas when maybe they just need your book.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. It is so true. These muscle exercises are really important for women. I mean, it is like any other kind of an exercise. You really have to stick with it, and you have to do them in order for them to really work. But they are. It's really good to keep the muscles tight. And, that, of course, that's really good for lovemaking. When you're with your partner and you have these tight muscles, that makes it more pleasurable for him.
Well, and I'm thinking, too, wouldn't it be fun to get in a circle with women and do this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
I mean, I can just imagine the laughing and the cackling that would come out of something like this.
It is fun, and I've led circles, many circles where we have done that. And then you incorporate that into a dance, and then you do that on your own. And then another component that can go with that is by seeing the, basically it's a mantra, but you say, ooh, when you squeeze. Because that ooh sound has an effect on the sexual chakra. So have you ever noticed, like, when your beloved hugs you and kisses you and kisses your neck and you go, ooh.
Yeah, it's well, just sort of a natural sound that comes out.
Yep, absolutely. And that is what's happening down there. And so when you say that, there is actually a vibration that is that affects that energy center in your sexual area. So that adds even more juice to your sexual energy and to your feelings of feeling sexy and feeling like a woman.
Right, right. Well, now, I know this might sound like a dumb question, and forgive me for asking you, because I'm not sure how I would define this myself. But you know, I want to remember that some of my listeners may be really new to this and don't know yet about energy and energetics. So if somebody's hearing us talk about sexual energy, or how would you define energy? How do they know if they're getting it, you know?
That's a good question. Energy, it's easy and yet it's complicated. First of all, just everything on the planet has energy, and we as human beings are vehicles, basically fleshy vehicles that hold electricity that keep us alive, that keep us functioning. People who are alive in a body vehicle have energy. People who are dead, they don't have any energy. There's a life force that keeps us living and breathing and growing and traversing the planet. So that's a broad definition, but when you get a little more specific, each human being has a variety of energy centers, which we usually call the chakras. And each energy center, there are seven of them in the traditions, many traditions. There are seven energy centers, they start at the base of the spine, and they travel. Each individual one travels up the spine. So the second one is in your sexual organs. The third one is in your belly area. The fourth chakra is in your heart. The fifth is in the throat. The sixth is between the eyebrows. And then the seventh is at the crown of the head. And each of these energies corresponds to different feelings and different emotions, different organs. And in a lot of my practices, in a lot of my teachings, I will specifically ask people to experience each individual energy because they are subtle. We experience them every single day, but we are just not aware of it. So having an awareness of the energy will help us to empower us in so many ways, because we know what's going on inside of us. And then oftentimes if we're feeling out of sorts, we can identify what energy is weak, where do I need to build some energy. And so there are many practices to balance the energies within our bodies, far beyond what's in my book. But
Do you get into in your book a little bit about how to start to sense those energies and maybe connect with those energy chakra points?
Absolutely. There's an exercise right in the beginning in the chapter about energy, and it's an exercise to help you just tune in to the different chakras so that you can experience the sensations of each energy center. So yes, that's in the book.
Now, in your press materials, you talk about energy triangles. Is that different from the chakras?
That's a very good question. Actually, it is different. It is different. I call it the energy triangle because I've identified the three specific energy centers in a woman's body that I feel have been de-energized over all these many, many centuries of needing to push down our power and our attributes. And those three areas are our sexual energy, our spirit, our spiritual energy, and our inner strength. So I feel that those three energies together, when they are strengthened and brought up into equal strength, equal revitalization, that creates like what I call a triangle. But the triangle is it's important because all sides need to be strong. You know, you can be a very strong woman, and you can be a spirited woman, but you can have very low sexual energy or shame about your sexual energy, and the triangle is not complete, and so you're not complete as a completely energized as a positive energy woman. There's something missing. And likewise, if you're feeling really sexy and you're connected to your goddess self and you know who you are, but you don't have any power in the world, then the triangle's, you know, it's not complete. And so that person is not complete. So that's why I call it the energy triangle. It's important to have those three energies built up, revitalized, and in equal power so that you can become a complete, whole, and super energized woman.
So if you don't have the three sides, you know, sort of in alignment, all functioning in a good way, does that affect our health or our self-esteem?
It really does. It does. It really, self-esteem really comes from being intimate with each aspect of ourselves. And it does take work. It does take time. So if we're missing, if we focus on being powerful in the world and we're, you know, we're making our way, we're achieving what we want to achieve and that type of thing, but we're disconnected from who we are as a spiritual being. We don't really know what's going on with our soul, and we don't pay attention to what's happening. There's going to be something nagging inside of us that's not going to let us be at our greatest joy. So there is that feeling of that there's something missing, there's something incomplete, and oftentimes we don't even really acknowledge it until there's a moment in time when we stumble and we have to take a look at ourselves. It could be when something's not going right, relationships are suffering, or we're suffering with our relationship with ourselves. And then if we really take a look and we see that we're not connected in with our sexuality, not appreciating our bodies, not connected into who we are, who our soul is, and not really strong in our attitude and in our physical being so that we can express who we are in the world, then, yes, we can probably stumble and have self-doubt, possibly, you know, start not liking ourselves so much. So
these practices, are they rooted in any sort of, you know, ancient or traditional practices?
Yes, in fact, a lot of them are. Believe it or not, the people that lived back in, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, they were exploring with energy. They knew about energy back then. Egyptians played with it. Hindus, the people way back pre-Hindu in India, they played with energy. They had energetic practices. They discovered how you can manipulate energy and charge it up by using breathing, with sound, and then eventually with physical gestures. And they really did discover the subtleties of energy and how to affect it within ourselves. So some of the paths that I followed the most have been through tantric yoga, mm-hmm. and then also Taoism, and that is from China. Working with energy and harnessing it to improve health and well-being. So yes, those are two.
Well, let me ask you about Tantra, because, you know, sometimes if you go on the Internet, it seems like it's really hard. You know, I'll just say it. It seems like some of these Tantra, or they call it Tantra, are really just selling sex in disguise.
Yeah.
You know, can you comment on that a little bit so people can differentiate between what you're talking about and what that stuff's all about?
Sure. You know, that is such a good question, because it is confusing. It's very, very confusing. Tantra in itself is basically a spiritual path, and it's using energy to purify the body so that we can become a vessel and a clear channel for spiritual energy to enter through us. And it's a path towards enlightenment. So, and there are many different paths of Tantra. So, however, some of the paths do recognize the power of sexual energy and sexual energy as a healing energy, so that it will purify the body much more quickly and help us to become a more enlightened being more quickly. So that being said, some tantric practices do include sexual engagement with, you know, between two people, the masculine and the feminine. It's the circulation of the polarities of masculine and feminine energy. And so the tantric practices using sex, they're not necessarily wrong. However, there are some Western practices where they kind of forget all about spirituality altogether, and it does become more of a just in a long, long lingering sexual connection. So it's a very vast and wide practice, tantra is, and so it goes from being completely spiritual to being completely sexual.
So when you go on a website and you see these sites where, you know, they're sort of showing all of these hard-bodied women, chances are this isn't a real tantra site. This is really it's just about sex, and they've sort of dressed it up to make it look like it's about goddess or it's about something sacred.
Right, exactly. I mean, yes, hard-body women can be doing, can actually be having real tantra.
That's true.
But really, it's all about just the another aspect that is so important is really recognizing the divinity in each other. So we can be totally not hard-bodied at all, and with a partner who's not a hard body, but seeing them only as the divine, the most beautiful divine being around, and just honoring each other and connecting each other with each other sexually. That's really more what it's, that's the more of the reality of tantra, especially if it's tantric sex. You don't have to have a hard body at all. It's the soul that you're experiencing. It's the essence of each other. And
it's happening in the head is what you're saying.
Well, it
I mean, it's in the body, but it's not like you're being turned on by the physical.
Oh, exactly. It's actually an energetic, it is a kinetic, an energetic connection with each other. You experience each other energetically, because when you're with your partner, you can feel each other's sexual energy. You can feel each other's love coming from each other's heart. You can feel a lot of couples are so close and so connected, you can almost intuit what each other is doing or thinking or feeling inside. So it's tantric sex is really more about connecting on all of these levels.
Okay. Well, believe it or not, we've already talked almost 45 minutes, and we have about 10. I know, it goes by so fast. We have about 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure I cover what you think is most important that I haven't asked you yet. You know, would it be about the goddess archetypes or some other aspect of your work or something in the book that we haven't gotten to yet?
Well, I think maybe just we can just touch a little bit about goddess in general that I think would help women. This is something that I also stressed in my book that I think is very important for women to do, is to really become familiar with some aspects of ancient women's history. I think one of the things that helps me, along with the energy work that I did, to really love myself as a woman and to appreciate women in general, was to learn about our history and to learn about ancient cultures, the goddesses from the cultures around the world, the practices, the reverence for women. I think that is so, so important. And women aren't really taught that anywhere. It's kind of a self-study that we need to do in order to find out this information. And thank goodness for people like you, Karen, that are sharing this around the world and with your books, because we're so disconnected from the beauty of our history that once we discover how wonderful it was and how rich the cultures were, how powerful women were, how women were asked to be powerful, it helps our self-esteem.
Well, it's I think it's like crossing a threshold, you know, and once you become aware of that stuff, you can't go back. And whenever you see oppression and you see women subjugated or women still conditioned and being oppressed by religion, well, it kind of makes you crazy because
right.
You know better. You know, you're not in that paradigm anymore.
Exactly. And that's the thing about the archetypes that I'm starting to play with, and I know that's been done before by some scholars, is to become familiar with some of these beautiful, phenomenal goddesses and women leaders of our historic past, and notice their traits and see what we can, you know, who do we identify with the most? Who are we most like? Are we more?
Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite?
Well, Artemis has always been one of my favorites. The goddess, the virgin huntress of the moon, independent, adventuresome. I've always identified with her. Of course, Aphrodite. I love Aphrodite. Inanna. I love her. Let's see. Oh, and then as far as Egyptian goddesses, Hathor,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of mine are in the realms of the goddesses who of fertility and sexuality. Artemis is probably not the only one who isn't.
And, you know, and I can very well imagine that in these temples of Aphrodite, you know, where, you know, academia will say, you know, in the, you know, in where they practiced sacred prostitution. And, you know, unless you know the mores of the time, you realize it's not like prostitution today. It was something totally different. It was something sacred. I would very well imagine the stuff that you're bringing out in the book, helping women reconnect with these energetics, probably was stuff that, you know, was taught to the temple priestesses or,
yes.
you know, the women of the time maybe knew this stuff.
That's exactly what I'm suspecting. I'm investigating, because when I hear about some of the practices that were done with Inanna and Ishtar, the women, sexual priestesses is what I call them. I know that they've been termed sacred prostitutes, but I really think they're sacred sexual priestesses to bring healing to men and women, and to also provide that type of divine energy to help them heal, to help bring them light. So, and then also the same with the women of the tantric practices. There were many, many cults where sexual union was a part of the ritual, and men would approach women as if they were goddess herself, and the woman, this physical woman, was the vehicle to enlightenment. So the men approached the women very reverently. With all the worship, they really did worship the goddess. So it does sound a little corny, but that's where that came from.
Well, because really what you're saying is in that union together, they were touching God, you know?
Yes.
What could be more blissful? What a powerful thing. You know, I mean, I can imagine people go their entire life and you know, dreaming about something like that, you know, having a real connection with the divine, and you do it through the woman's body.
Yes, yes. And when it's done with reverence like that, it really is expansive. It's more than just blissful. It really does help you touch a deeper level of existence. And it could be, you know, and that's the thing, there was that time when those sacred sexual priestesses were banished and then destroyed, and that's the thing that I think that's one of the things that kind of motivates me to get this all going again, to have women really understand their power, because I just feel so sad that there was a time when women were in their glory, when they were honored, their sexuality was honored and revered, and then it became a sin and something to be ashamed of. That's why so many women, I think, have lost their self-love. They're afraid to get in touch with their sexuality. But
right.
if they can get back in touch with it again, realize the multidimensionality of it. It's a lot more than just looking for a man.
Well, and also, too, you know, imagine this. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Imagine if we got to the point in society where sex was sacred again, and it was up to the woman, the mother, to teach her daughter, to teach her son about sacred sexuality. I mean, imagine if a woman could take her boy or her girl to, you know, one of these, you know, sacred priestesses. Imagine the you know, how much more healthy and loving our relationships, you know, could be in just our everyday lives. I mean, I know that sounds far-fetched, but is it really? I mean,
no, I don't think it's far-fetched at all. In fact, I feel like more mothers need to become responsible. I agree with you completely. I think that that's one of the biggest problems right now with our young women. They're engaging sexually, and they have really no idea of what's going on. They kind of
yeah.
do on a certain level, but not really. And it's up to moms and mothers and fathers for their sons. But I agree. Educating the children, getting them really honoring their these times of their lives where we could honor them with initiations, like women, you know, girls starting their menstruation and boys going into their manhood. Really making it a special time, making it an honoring. Of the passage into the next phase of living. If we did that, I really think all of us would have better self-esteem.
Well, and I think about that book, The Red Tent, and
yeah.
I know a lot of people read it, and I was amazed that one of the things the women did was when a woman was going to be married, they had a ritual that they put her through that actually slowly, gently broke her hymen so
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it was sacred in itself, you know, this penetration that happened. So it wasn't it wasn't sort of a rough and uncomfortable, you know, thing for her on her wedding night. You know, she could then enjoy you know sex with her beloved, you know, and
yeah.
even stuff like that. You know, I just think it would be so much better for women if we had those sorts of rituals, because it's education too when it gets right down to it. It's sacred education.
It really is. It is about education. And it's also It helps us to become more responsible with our bodies. Excuse me. When we know what's happening with our bodies, when we love our bodies, we're more careful with it and we're more responsible. Right now, there are so many young women that teenagers, a lot of teenage pregnancies, a lot of sexually transmitted diseases on the rise among young people. Because they're not feeling responsible. They don't honor their bodies. They haven't had the chance to really see how sacred and magical they are. So,
right. Well, Melanie, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got literally 2 minutes. Please say real quickly where they can find your book.
Sure, absolutely. You can go to my website. It's positiveenergywoman.com, and it's also sold on amazon.com.
Okay, and the name of the book again is?
It's Sexy, Spirited, and Strong, Becoming a Positive Energy Woman.
Well, you know, I love... 90 seconds. I love that you say the positive energy woman and her benefits to the planet uplifts the collective energy of women, creates energetic balance in the world, will influence equality among people. So true, Melody. And thank you. I just want to thank you for putting this book out and for being so dedicated to, you know, helping women with this, because it's so, as we've been saying, it's so desperately needed.
Well, it is my pleasure. I feel like it's my journey on the planet. It's my purpose, and I am so honored to be the one to do this, and appreciative of my sisters such as you, Karen, for doing work also to empower women. The world will be a better place when we, as we move along and get more and more people attuned to what's available for information and.
Absolutely. Well, Melanie, thank you again so much. And again, let me just quickly say before we're cut off here, Sexy Spirited and Strong, Becoming a Positive Energy Woman. Definitely, listeners, you want to get this book. And the website is positiveenergywoman.com. Melanie, we're just about gone here, but thank you so very much for your time tonight to be on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. I really enjoyed it. I love your show, love your work, and this is really enjoyable. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, and good night. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, good night, listeners, and if you can still hear me, I hope you'll be back with me next week, next Wednesday, and we'll have another great show for you. Good night, and have a wonderful week.